and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the man who regularly makes a bad impression on me is Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, bad impression?
It's an awful line, isn't it? Do you know what? And already, without giving the game away, I can see our star guest today shaking his head in disapproval. It wasn't the best, right? But do you know what? It'll do for now, and we should just move on, because I'm excited about who we have in store.
Me too. I thought he was chuckling with amusement, to be
fair.
No,
he was very much this.
So, our guest today is someone, well, rather special, to be fair. He's a star of stage and screen for many, many years now. He's an impressionist, a comedian, an actor, a playwright, and a gentleman who has become a household name in the country for decades now. It is, of course, the one and only Mr. Rory Bremner. Hi,
hello.
Rory, how are you?
Under arrest for saying I make an impression, or it's just
it was poor. I do you know what? As soon as it was delivered, I could just see the disapproval, Mr. Bremner.
You have just failed to make it out of the pit lane, I'm afraid. lovely to see you.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us today. Pleasure to meet you. Pleasure to have you on the show, especially because you're rather busy at the moment. You're on the road, touring, I believe, as we speak. Tell us about the touring show quiz.
Yes, I'm coming to you live from Chichester, where I never thought I'd say that. That sounds very Ian McKellen. I am coming to you live from Chichester. Well, darling, we are about to open. Exciting. I'm doing this play quiz. It's if you remember, think back, and it's 25 years ago last week, in fact, that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came onto the screens. And you know, of course, the great Chris Tarrant hosted. Okay, so and we'll come on to that. And 22 years ago this year, that the major went on the famous they say it's a coughing major, but of course it wasn't the major that coughed. It was supposed.
Was that the scam?
That was scam.
Yes, I remember.
Was it? Or was it, Jason? Because of course, that's what the whole play is about. They were found guilty. They weren't sentenced to jail, though, because I think the judge thought, well, you know, he was quite right. It was a victimless crime in some ways. And why am I sending them to jail? So he said gave them an 18-month sentence. Anyway, for those who don't know, you're familiar with Millionaire, the quiz show, and actually the major's wife and his brother-in-law had already been on the programme, so there's a family history, and Oni goes onto the programme. And the first night, he was useless. He got up to about £4,000. He burnt two lifelines. Warm-up, he was asked, is Rupert Murdoch English, New Zealander, Australian or South African? He had to ask a friend who told him Australian. He then went 50-50 and decided he was South African. So he was pretty hopeless. Anyway, so he blundered his way through the first night, but then he came back in the second and went all the way up to the million. And they found afterwards, they went through the tapes and they thought, there's something happening, something's gone on. And they found this coughing, which coincided with a lot of the right answers. And he would tend to roll through the answers. Like, let's say it was, okay, what's the capital of France? They would say Rome, Paris, Lisbon, London. And he would go, oh, Rome. No, I'm thinking about Rome. It would be London, but I'm quite drawn to Lisbon, or maybe Paris.
See, I can't remember it, but I do
can
remember
you
reading about it.
See,
was
I,
it
I,
as bad as that? So, as obvious as that?
Well, yes and no, because the thing was that the tape was sort of given in by the production company, and they sort of as they found it. But they kind of they sort of sweetened it up a bit, so the sound was quite clear. Question is, in the studio, would he be able to hear that? And all the rest. And there's a long bit where he didn't cough, and the I think the defence said, well, that's because they knew that, or rather the prosecution said, well, that's because they knew that the guy knew the answers. And so, they, well, how does somebody he's never met know whether the major knew the answers or not? But anyway, they said there were 19 coughs. There were 192 coughs in the whole program. Then they didn't have technology, which I think they have now, which can actually tell the quality of somebody's cough. Now, as an impressionist, when you do somebody's voice, people say, oh, that sounds very like somebody. So you might say, yes, you do sound very like Chris Tarrant. Okay, let's play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? But then if you put that through a computer, the computer could say, oh, no, nothing like it. The speech pattern's different. The rhythms are different and all that.
Okay.
And I think you can do a similar thing now with coughs. So they may appeal again in the future. I don't know what the statute of limitations is. But anyway, so what James Graham, who did Sherwood, he's done Dear England, he's done... Mm-hmm. He's amazing, he's fantastic. He's still about sort of 26, I think, at the moment. He's amazing. And he's taken this thing and he's got all the tension of the TV studio. So we're recreating that moment with all the sort of the sound and the music and the, sort of the pulsating rhythm. Really exciting. And that feels electric, really, in the studio. So we're recreating all that tension of the TV studio. But then you've got the drama of the courtroom. And then on top of that, you've got the audience who are engaged and they vote halfway through and they vote again at the end. And of course, at the halfway, they go, oh, for heaven's sake, guilty. Or as Chris Tarrant still says, he's guilty as Guy Fawkes. I mean, come on. He is so guilty.
Hey, so Rory, Chris Tarrant, what does he think of your impression? Does he enjoy it? Does he like it?
He says, you don't sound anything like me. Not even close. He says, Who are you being? We did a little thing on the One Show, which is quite funny. You can probably Google it, but yes, where we had him sort of just staring at the camera, very straight faced. And I was being his voice in the background, saying, I can't believe we're digging this up after 22 years. But that's just extra motivation, the fact that he doesn't like it. But I mean, he pretends. I've known Chris for a long time, and he's great fun. I mean, what you see is what you get with Chris. He's one of the most uncomplicated people I've ever come across. I mean, he's just, I'll do this. Yeah, I'll do that. Oh, yeah, do I really want to do this? Very straightforward. I listen to his Desert Island Discs, and it's it's Phil Collins, it's Beatles, it's Williams, it's Eric Clapton. He loves his cricket, loves his fishing, loves his wine. Great guy.
Do you think, to a certain extent, anybody is accepting or does anybody like an impression of themselves, do you find? Or do most people sort of instantly reject it and say, oh, it doesn't sound anything like me?
I think, people are quite often flattered. I think here's the thing. There's only one thing with worse than somebody doing an impression of you, and that's nobody doing an impression of you.
True.
There's all sorts of stories about that. I mean, Noel Edmonds I struggled with for a long time to try, and I thought, oh, no. And I suddenly heard, there was a little vibration, a little chuckle in the voice. Oh, now let's speak to the banker. But I think he sort of was slightly miffed that nobody did him on Spitting Image. I think Michael Heseltine wanted his head from Spitting Image, so they held it back until he'd resigned, and then they said, we don't need this anymore. But it's that thing about, the sadist and the masochist, the masochist is saying, oh, please hurt me, please hurt me. And the sadist just goes, no. So you're nobody until somebody does you. Who sang that song? You're nobody till somebody does you.
So when did you first discover you could do impressions? I mean, how did it all start?
Oh, that's school. That's a school thing.
Okay.
It was the classic sort of class clown thing. I was really into sport. So, the sort of Richie Benners and all that. I grew up listening to him on the cricket, on the BBC cricket. And John, Jim Laker who used to do which is a remark. You never have him doing the cricket nowadays because he's much too sort of boring, I suppose. Voice wise, although amazing cricket, of course. So there's the sports commentators.
Murray Walker.
Murray Walker was, of course, talking about fielding, and there is the car of Ayrton Senna, and there was all that other silly things. Do you remember with James Hunt? And yes, and I can't see who's in the lead. Louder. I can't see. I give that to you as a riposte to your impression earlier on. actually, Murray Walker, I did do. Here we go. Sports fans and car fans. So the Murray Walker one. I'm in Monaco doing a show, and Des Lynam's hosting. So,
yeah.
Remember Des Lynam? Yeah. Wynam, Dynam, Lynam. he's a bit of a character. A bit of a ladies' man, tell you what. There we go. Tell you what, we'll be back later with more tennis. So we had to get Murray Walker on stage, and we did this little thing. So, okay, let's do a game. So Des would say, tell you what, I've always quite fancied myself as an impressionist. Shall I give it a go? So we said, okay, well, let's do the competition. So I went behind into the wings of the theatre, and I was like, and there is the car of Emerson Fittipaldi. Look at that, look at that. Came back on stage. He said, that's very good. Then Des goes behind the thing, and we've got Murray Walker hidden away behind. And the real Murray Walker goes, excellent. And there is the car of... And of course, people go, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So I said, come out here, Des. And Murray Walker walks onto stage. Huge
applause.
Yeah, yeah. And I turn to him and say, oh, come on, Des, anybody can do it with the makeup. And there's a pause, and Murray Walker said, no, I'm Murray Walker. And I realised he hadn't got the joke at all. He's slightly confused. But, of course, a legend, wasn't he? And, you know, for those of us who can slightly longer memories, Formula One, he was just a legend. And a character, of course. And they famously, he was in advertising, wasn't he? Didn't he? He gave the world phrases like... what was that? I can't even remember the project. What the product?
I think he did A Mile a Day Helps You Work, Rest and Play. I think he was part of that.
Go back to the pits. I think the other one was Bounce Makes Budgies Bounce with Health. I can't remember the name. It was a budgie food or something. But yeah, so he did all that. But but now actually, if I left Formula One's changed, I've got very, very lucky because my wife's an artist and did some... large life-size sculptures, and she was approached many, many years ago by Jackie Stewart.
All right.
Said, you know, Tessa, I've noticed these sculptures. I would like to have... You've got these amazing hippopotamuses, and I wondered if you'd do those for the... You know, if could I buy a pair of those for the garden? And so a great friendship developed with Jackie Stewart that goes back, you know, maybe 20 years or so or more. And through him, we got invited out to Bahrain for one of the early Grand Prix out there and got to meet a lot of Ron Dennis and a number of the other great Formula One leaders. The first or second Bahrain Grand Prix, amazingly, the day after the Grand Prix, we went to the track and they were just playing with the cars. So they had sort of Radicals and McLarens and things like that. I remember getting into a car and I couldn't see the bloke of the helmet. I said, who's driving this car? They said, oh, it's Gilles de Ferran. Gilles de Ferran? Yes, it is. So in I get the car and I'm going, make it stop. Because he flew around the track. And over the years, we've driven around there by DC, David Coulthard. Jackie, who drove it so smoothly, I mean, it was amazing. Right. It was a great... He didn't waste any energy. It was all just on the kind of the fluidity and the flow. And these drivers, they're braking too much, you know. And my wife got into a car, and Lewis was driving. And she had this sort of... She had the bruises from the seatbelt about a few days later. Because Lewis was just... do you want to sort of just go round normally or should we have fun? And, of course, she said, well, let's have some fun. And he was screaming up the inside of people on corners. He was flying around. And, you know, the kind of... So that was hugely exciting. And it sort of lit a thing with Formula One that's sort of continued... ever since, although, you know, in this current sort of Verstappen-dominated time, somebody said, you know, if you strip Verstappen out, it's actually really quite exciting.
Very true.
I must say, your Jackie impression is off the scale. It's identical.
You know, I would say, though, the funny thing is that it's actually because I was born... very close to Billy Connolly, do you know? And this is the thing, you know, it's amazing, it really is, because they were both born near Dumbarton, you know, Helensburgh, up that kind of way. There's a place that Billy used to talk about called Drimmen, and it's written dry men, he said, and you've never seen people drink more in your life. There's no dry men there. But, you know, Billy's kind of a bit more gruff. I'm a bit Billy Goat gruff, you know, like this. But if you take the gruffness away and you go a wee bit higher, it's Jackie.
Yeah.
And that's how you play. That's how you play with the voices, you know.
I love that.
And brings us beautifully, Mr. Bremner, onto Cars, which is what we're here to talk about. So yes. Let's go back to the beginning. Where did it all start for you? What are your earliest car memories?
Your earliest car? Oh, we had what was called an Austin Cambridge Countryman.
Oh, right.
Remember the number ASF331B? If you find that now, brilliant, amazing. If you've ever find that car, the number of it, ASF331B. And it was one of that sort of light blue. How do we do that? And I think it's one of the, I think they might have even had some wood in the frame there. Or was that, mm-hmm. that was Morris Minors and things. But that was that sort of old kind of estate car. And Mum had a Sunbeam Stiletto. Get that.
Oh, what's that? Stiletto.
Stilettos, yes. Can you remember?
Why? Jason's doing some live Googling name? As we speak.
What was the latest one? With the Porsche Cayenne, and Clarkson said, Cayenne, the Porsche named after an ingredient. That's right. So that was our first car. And Dad, I think, bought one of those old Rovers. You know, those big Rover 90s or something like that? So that was our early car memories as a family. And
I'm liking the Stiletto, actually. That's quite a groovy-looking thing, isn't it?
It is. It's tiny. But you know what? When I was trying to drive it, and I remember Mum let me sit on her lap when I was just starting to drive, or maybe even let me drive up. We had a tiny little drive. We were in a sort of house in Edinburgh, in Merkeston, in Morningside, I have to say. And it was a tiny little drive, and a house which was divided into four flats. And round the back you drove, and there was a sort of wooden shed-like building at the end. Mm. And Mum let me drive around to that, and I promptly put my foot on the accelerator instead of the brake.
No.
Into the coal shed. So that was really good. So that's what I think that might have been in the Stiletto, or we had one of those little Morrises. But that was that. But my first car, when I started to make some money, got a little red Golf. That was my thing. VW Golf. And then when it started to get nice money, was a BMW convertible, one of those 3 Series convertibles. Mm-hmm. And then it just went through all sorts of weird sort of strange cars, Toyota,
Supra?
Yes, what was the one just down from a Supra?
Celica.
Celica. God, Dave, you know your cars.
I know my Japanese cars.
So, yes, Celicas. And then with dogs, it was a Mercedes estate and stuff. Then I did stuff for a while with Alfa, did stuff with Jaguar, and I'm now an ambassador with Audi, who makes amazing cars. And they have, I do lots of hosting and doing podcasts and film things for them and hosting live events. And they have lent me an e-tron GT, which
what do you think?
They are just
something else, isn't it?
Have you driven it, Jace?
Yeah, have you? I have, yeah. It's almost identical to the Taycan.
The Taycan, is it?
But it's a little bit softer. It still is quick.
Oh, it's
just a bit more rounded and less edgy. But what a piece of kit, isn't it, Rory?
It really is. I think it's something like 0-60 in about 3.3 seconds.
That's enough, isn't it?
Actually, with the e-tron, the non-GT version of that, when you first get into the electric car things, it's like a slingshot. You've got the acceleration is extraordinary on those things. But against that, the fact is that you can be a little bit smug for a while. Now I know there is the whole argument about what goes into making the electric cars. I do know that and I get that. But at the end of the day, when you're driving, you're not kicking out a whole lot of CO2. So it's
a very true
direction. So there was that. But I compensate for that.
How do you offset your environmentally sound decisions?
It's going to be a V8 somewhere.
By holding on to my old Alfa Giulia.
Nice.
Now, you see, this takes us into my proper car years were sort of like from the mid-90s, really, when I fell into a group of friends led by a guy called Tarek Wildman. And he is son-in-law of O'Reilly, Tony O'Reilly, a wonderful Irish, he played rugby, he was a great businessman, and a wonderful, wonderful guy. Anyway, Tarek, obsessed, loves old Alphas, and right. He had sort of three or four of them, he's got an old Ford Galaxy, he's got an old Beetle, all those sort of stuff. And we were, in 95, he said, we're doing this rally around Morocco. So Morocco was the first one, and then when I bought the car in 96, the next year we drove around Spain and Portugal. Wonderful. And that was in a group of about sort of five or six. So others had old Alphas, had old Mercs, had old Aston Martins or something like that. It was all very kind of high end. And the following year we went around Ireland. The following year is France, Switzerland and Italy. And just the most amazing thing. And yeah. What was a joy, I remember, the Moroccan one perhaps most fun because there were only about 12 or 15 of us. And it was great fun coming around a corner. And then you would see outside a cafe, five of the cars lined up, like at the start of the Le Mans or something like that. Just at an angle, you'd see three Alphas and a Merc and an Aston or something like that. And outside,
sexy sight.
Having a cafe stop or something like that. And they were just great fun. They did tend to break down.
Yeah.
I remember the France, Switzerland, Italy one. So one of the cars overheated on the way on the M3 down to Southampton.
It hadn't gone far then before problems.
Tarek then was just rushing back and forwards to try and deal with this so quickly that I think the head gasket went on his Beetle. Then we got onto the ferry, and then while we were on the ferry, one of the other ones seized somehow or other, so it had to be towed off the ferry the other end. So yeah. We just got into northern France and we'd lost three cars already.
It was an adventure. Strong start.
But there was something about the adventure, and I remember, I think later that year, driving the Alpha, and I was driving it from the south of France back up north, and it broke down near Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Handy that.
Have a small glass of wine while it was being sort of fixed. But and then I had to make it to the hotel that I booked. And I remember just arriving, eventually they made it, and arriving at the hotel and driving it. It was in the middle of a vineyard. And it was just at the end of summer. So a little bit of dew, a little bit of mist. It was about 8:30 or so, 9 o'clock at night, just beginning to get dark. And arriving, smelling of petrol, but this feeling that you'd almost flown a mission in a, you know, take your sunglasses off and there'd be sort of goggle marks around there. But you felt like you were returning from a mission somewhere because you'd nursed this engine miles in and you knew that at the other end was, a nice supper, I think I even said, do you do half bottles? And I said, a half bottle of red and a half bottle of white or something like that to myself. And it was just lying in the bath afterwards. I mean, they did say, looked at me when because I smelt so much of petrol as I came in. I think if somebody lit a cigarette in the foyer. That was the sense. And the antithesis of this was up in Spain, and then the following year, driving somebody back from a party down through the mountains, because Tarek sort of lives down in the south of Spain now, and in the mountains that go from Malaga up to Ronda, if you've ever been there. So if you ever see Alphas, or he's got a Lotus Elise, so if you're ever on that road, he might very often pass you there. And we were winding down those Spanish mountain roads, and this young guy, who was sort of a tutor, I think, to one of the kids, and he was about 19 or 20, he said, why do you drive these old cars when the new ones are so much better? And I almost wanted to put him off at the side of the road and say, and it is 2 o'clock in the morning. We are driving in an Alfa Giulia Spider with the top down, playing a little bit of opera through these winding things. On a winding mountain road. If you don't see the romance of that, then...
Well, those that know. Absolutely. He obviously didn't know.
And alphas are alphas. So It was wonderful. And these trips around in Morocco, I remember it was, I mean, that poor country has now been hit by, you know, desperate, the earthquakes and these things. I remember that summer of 95, April 95, there were big floods, if you look it up in Morocco. And I can remember as we came to a river once, and the river was in spate, and suddenly this tide came down just as I was on a bridge. And I remember it washed over the bridge, and I was driving the Beetle at that stage. And I remember going across the bridge, and as I went across the bridge, feeling the car just shift along.
No way.
The water sort of coursed over this thing, and I just sort of put my foot down and got to the other side of the bridge. But it was, yeah, I think even Betty Boothroyd was, she was holidaying in Morocco at the same time, and there's a famous thing about her getting stuck. But that was, I know I'm pushing this analogy of coming back from a mission. And, you know, landing on the runway and your friends in the officer's mess going, well, I think Chalky bought it, but good old Blinky's made it back. It was a little bit like that. But there was that sense in the hotel that night of who'd made it back through the floods or who'd been cut off or this or that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Rory, here's a question for you. If we were to tell you that you had to pick one car and one car only from all of the cars you've owned in your life and stick with it for the rest of your life, which one would it be and why? And I know that that's a killer question, but it's got to be done.
Golly gosh. Well, I'll cheat a little bit. Say, and I know, okay, it does come with a warning, I'm an ambassador, but I think the e-tron GT is the most fun I've ever had, because it is so smooth and it is so quick. Forgive me for that.
No, not at all.
No, it's a proper bit of kit.
It's such an amazing car, and I'm still trying to dig it up for you here. Oh, God. Do you know what? It's always horses for courses. If I was abroad, if I was driving, if I was in France or Switzerland, you know, if I was driving along any of the Corniche and the Riviera, you know, it would be, God, this sounds incredibly sort of elite.
Romantic.
But I mean, thank you, because this is, well, you know, this is a car podcast. People will take this out of context, but we're talking cars here. So I think if I was in Italy, I'd take the Alfa. Of course, because even when it breaks down, it's fun, because it broke down once in Tuscany and I had to walk to a garage, which meant I went back to walking pace and I could hear the cowbells in the field and I could hear and I could stop. And there's an old guy in a cafe and you meet people and there's something about, you know, there's always an adventure with one of the classic cars.
So we think, Rory, that music and cars go particularly well together. Yes. So imagine what your fantasy drive would be. So we want to know, where are you, where are you going, what you're listening to, and most importantly, what are you driving?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to those things, and I'm going to say I'm going to drive through the south of France and the Alps and into Italy in the Spider, and I will be listening to some opera. I'll be listening to Vissi d'Arte, I'll be listening to some Pavarotti, some Domingo, and, I mean, this podcast only a homage to Tarek, really, because I mean he would make up tapes. He would make up tapes of music, and it would be and Bond themes, stuff like that.
Bond themes work particularly well in that kind of environment, I think, don't they? With the big mountains and everything. On that note, I think you need to take us out, Jason.
Well, unfortunately, that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. Dave, as always...
Adrian Flux.
And what was that, my darling?
I did have my Alpha insured by Adrian Flux.
Did you? Good lad.
Go. Extremely on brand.
Yes.
We like that. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the fantastic Mr. Rory Bremner.
Come watch play. Quiz.
Absolutely. I was going to say that. Please check local press for details and go and see the play, as we're going to, Jason, aren't we, in Chichester for our little boys' night out down by the seaside. Also, don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!